You're listening to Back in the USSR.
Да здравствует 60-я годовщина Великой Октябрьской социалистической революции. Да здравствует героический советский народ и его доблестные вооруженные силы. Слава Коммунистической партии Советского Союза, руководящей и направляющей силе советского общества. Ура!
From the coffers of big business, the black shirts march again in German towns, handing out beat downs, murdering blacks and browns, and even whites they consider inferior, consider themselves superior. Hitler resurrected, the male disrespected, printing a diary, giving a platform to a Nazi. These are dangerous times, so please wake up and understand what's up with the countries of Europe and in France. The NF gets votes and cuts throats, and the port of Marseille is the fascist mainstay, and nationalism feeds the fires of hate. We need to demonstrate and physically decimate this racist, anti-communist crew. Kill one or two and beat the rest of them blue. Or should I say red, cause there's no quarter given or asked for, cause that's how we're living. And so I gotta ask you this then, is it just evil or to do through with the system that creates nation states and racial hates, disarms our fates and then devastates like the destruction it caused in World War II. Now in 92, are we going back to the day of the jackboot? Or will we change forever? I don't know about you, but I go hell for leather. Beat the fascists down like they got beat at Waterloo. They're as strong as we're weak. True indeed, true indeed. True. Well, we got troubles coming from the east side. Troubles from the east side. We got troubles coming from the east side. Yeah. Trouble again. And the world is getting nervous. Oh. Mankind, you got to be conscious. Yeah.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU. Greetings, comrades and friends, brothers and sisters. I am Siegfried, and as you might have noticed, I was not around last week. And first I should say, that was The Fascist Boon by Marxman, and that was the song I introduced the show with, and of course, there was a strong reason why I did that, and I'm just going to explain it shortly. As you might have noticed, I was not around last week. I was taking a short vacation in Ottawa, visiting a comrade of mine who I haven't seen in a long time. And it was wonderful to spend time with him and just generally chill out. But unfortunately, because I was away, I didn't get a chance to focus on this very pressing subject sooner. And what I'm talking about is the very, very, very real struggle against fascism being waged right now as we speak by working class and oppressed people across North America and worldwide. And that's the reason why I played that song at the beginning, you know, this anti-fascist song by Marxman. And the comrade I was visiting in Ottawa is actually an anti-fascist organizer there. And he's definitely had his hands full this year, especially after the anti-Islamophobia measure was passed in the Canadian House of Commons and the far-right racists started holding regular demonstrations on Parliament Hill. You know, he's definitely had his work cut out for him, you know, opposing the far right in Canada's capital city. If you're listening to this show, you probably know about what happened in Charlottesville, North Carolina, 2 weeks ago, and how courageous anti-fascist demonstrators faced down the largest gathering of Nazis and far right thugs to have assembled on this continent in years. These fascists had guns. Some of them were openly walking around with M16s. The cops had no problem with that. And these fascists were more than willing to use lethal force, as they showed. Anti-fascist organizer Heather Heyer was run over and killed by a fascist who drove his car into a crowd of anti-fascist demonstrators. 19 others were injured, and there were many more injuries sustained throughout the day. But the demonstrators held their ground and were ultimately able to shut down the fascist rally. And as has been made abundantly clear over the past 2 weeks, fascists can't hold a single rally anywhere in North America without vastly greater numbers of anti-fascists showing up and shutting them down hard. And that's a very encouraging sign. Now, these are anti-fascists that are unafraid to use force to shut down Nazi scum, just like in the Spanish Civil War and in World War II. And this is something that to be celebrated, because as history teaches us, the only way to stop fascist racists bent on genocide is to smash them and literally kick them off the streets. We also know the consequences if this doesn't happen, especially when these fascists receive state backing and encouragement, as we see in the U.S. under Donald Trump, and in the Eastern European countries like Ukraine, where fascist forces like Right Sector and Svoboda are not only backed by their own government, but are also receiving guns and training from the US and Canada, and have been since 2013. Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland, whose name I've mentioned quite a number of times, you know, she celebrates these Ukrainian fascists as freedom fighters, just like she celebrates her own Nazi collaborating grandfather. and she gets away with it, as do other officials in Western governments who are quick to offer token condemnations of fascist violence when it happens at home in places like Charlottesville, but are just as quick to offer support to fascist and quasi-fascist murder gangs in places like Ukraine and Syria, where appeals to tradition and culture and religious values are being used to justify sectarian slaughter. I mean, this is what fascism looks like. This is what capitalism in crisis looks like. When the ruling class is willing to unleash the most savage political forces imaginable in order to keep their wealth and property in the face of popular opposition. You know, popular opposition that is growing and has been growing. That was the way it happened in Germany and Italy during the Great Depression. And we see it happening again now in this age of austerity. Now is the time of monsters, as Antonio Gramsci once put it. But we also need to remember that now is also the time of monster hunters, because people everywhere are fighting back. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was All You Fascists by Billy Bragg, originally a Woody Guthrie song. And, of course, All You Fascists, they must lose, frankly, if we are to have a survivable future on this planet. Just like capitalism must lose. And fascism must be called out for what it is. An instrument of ruling class power and violence in defense of the profit motive. Something which these far-right groups certainly have no problem with, even though they might dispute being called pawns of elite interests, but that's exactly what they are and what they've been historically and still are today. The Nazi SA, the Nazi's paramilitary force, was used as a strike-breaking force in Germany in the 20s and the 30s, directly supported big business interests. The KKK received backing from the American state to target anti-war demonstrators and civil rights activists in the 1960s, backing from the FBI in particular. And I've already talked about the kind of support Svoboda and Rights Sector get in Ukraine right now, where it's effectively been integrated into the government and security forces, just as the SA and SS were in Nazi Germany. These guys might, you know, not always get state backing. Far-right groups might not always get state backing all the time. And sometimes the state cracks down on them. But they're always there to back up the capitalist state when it calls on them to do so. And that's very important to understand when we're talking about fascist violence and right-wing violence in general. And just as more reinforcement to what I just said, I'd like to read an excerpt from Michael Parenti's book, Democracy for the Few, where he provides numerous examples on how the American state in particular is, quote, cozy with right-wing violence. This is page 149 of Democracy for the Few, and I'm just going to read it verbatim here. This is what he says. In contrast to the way they treat the left, federal agents have done little to discourage violent right-wing extremist groups and sometimes have supported their activities. In San Diego, the FBI financed a crypto-fascist outfit called the Secret Army Organization, whose operations ranged from burglary and arson to kidnapping and attempted murder. The Senate Intelligence Committee revealed that the FBI organized 41 Ku Klux Klan chapters in North Carolina. Paid FBI informants in the Klan did nothing to stop Klan members from committing murder and other acts of violence. In some instances, as in the Greensboro, North Carolina massacre of four members of the Communist Workers' Party, they assisted the murderers by procuring weapons for them and directing them to the right location. From 1969 to 1972, U.S. military intelligence and the Chicago Police Red Squad, political police, jointly operated in an organization called the Legion of Justice. Its members clubbed and maced protesters and anti-war demonstrators, broke into their headquarters, stole files, vandalized a progressive bookstore, and committed other criminal acts against those who did not adhere to the free market dedications of the national security state. In contrast to the astronomical prison terms handed out to anti-war and anti-capitalist dissidents, violent rightists usually get off lightly. Consider the 10 members of the Vipers, an Arizona-based right-wing militia suspected of planning acts of violence against government buildings and charged with conspiracy to manufacture and possess destructive devices. They were given sentences ranging from 1 to 9 years. Some got probation and served no time at all. The same Louisiana District Court that sentenced civil rights activist Linda Evans to 45 years sentenced Don Black, a KKK member, who transported illegal weapons and attempted to set up a drug cartel, to 3 years. He was out in two. In instances of right-wing violence against the left, police rarely managed to catch the perpetrators. When asked what they intended to do about the 15 or so right-wing paramilitary terrorist camps within the United States, a Justice Department official said the camps did not appear to be in violation of any federal statute. When two Chicano socialists were killed by bombs planted in their cars, the FBI made no arrests. When a powerful bomb wrecked the offices of several progressive and civil liberties groups in New York City, injuring three people, the police made only a perfunctory investigation. After a series of threats, an anti-nuclear organizer was shot dead in Houston, and an assistant was seriously wounded. The police came up with not a clue. That neo-Nazi skinheads and other rightist terrorists repeatedly have been able to commit acts of violence and even publicly claim responsibility without getting caught means law enforcers have made little effort to monitor and deter their actions, unlike the way they deal with legal, peaceful groups on the left. Again, there is nothing inconsistent about this position. Leftist groups, no matter how nonviolent and lawful, challenge the capitalist system or some aspect of its privileges and abuses, while the rightist groups, no matter how violent and unlawful, do the dirty work for that system. Thus, there is a community of interest between the rightists and the law agencies, and often a community of methods. However, when right-wing extremists engage in counterfeiting and bank robberies and plan attacks against federal targets instead of leftist targets, as with the Oklahoma City bombing of a federal building that claimed 168 lives, including 19 children, in 1995. Then law enforcers move against them, albeit somewhat belatedly. So that's Michael Parenti, what he says in Democracy for the Few about how the American state is cozy with right-wing violence. And of course, that is by no means a complete list whatsoever. That is a very, very brief synopsis of a few examples of how the state does this, how the capitalist state does this. This is why it needs to be mentioned. This is why liberal attempts to equate left-wing and right-wing violence are so disgusting. Left-wing violence is never in the services of the capitalist state. And certainly in North America, almost always takes the form of self-defense against right-wing violence, police brutality, etc. I mean, this is why the Black Panther Party was formed in the first place. Like, one of the major reasons anyway. And there's numerous other examples. Right-wing violence, on the other hand, almost always targets the same people who are targeted by the police and the other repressive forces of the capitalist state. Poor people, people of color, immigrants, left-wing political forces, and other marginalized groups. I mean, listen to this testimony from the Charlottesville action. This was from Logan Rommel, a clergy person who was in Charlottesville who is now rethinking his stance on political nonviolence. He says, quote, "I never felt safer than when I was near Antifa. They came to defend people, to put their bodies between these armed white supremacists and those of us who could not or would not fight. They protected a lot of people that day, including groups of clergy. My safety, and safety is relative in these situations, was dependent on their willingness to commit violence. In effect, I outsourced the sin of my violence to them. I asked them to get their hands dirty so I could keep mine clean. Do you understand? They took that up for me. For the clergy they shielded. For those of us in danger. We cannot claim to be pacifist or nonviolent when our safety requires another to commit violence. And we ask for that safety. And so I come to this. White liberal Christian friends, I'm talking to you. I've seen a lot of condemnation of violent response. Lots of selective quoting of Dr. King. Lots of disparagement of Antifa and the so-called alt-left. A moral equivalency from the depths of hell if I ever saw one. You want to be nonviolent? That's good and noble. I think I do, too. But I want you to understand what you're asking of the people who take this necessary stance against white supremacy. The people who go to look evil in the face. You're asking them to be beaten with brass knuckles, with bats, with fists, to be pounded into the ground, stomped on, and smashed. You're asking them to bleed on the pavement and the grass. Some of them are going to die, and you're asking them to do that without defending themselves. So that's Logan Rommel, clergy person who was in Charlottesville, talking about basically the need of people to defend themselves against fascism. I mean, as the introduction in this next song, which I'm going to play, actually talks about, basically people need to defend themselves against the fascists. They can't just turn the other cheek. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
We'd say that the ideas that they put forward outside football grounds on working class estates have to be combated politically, but also that they've got a physical agenda and that has to be met physically as well. People have to defend themselves against the fascists. They can't just turn the other cheek.
Back. was not a communist. Next I came to the Church Unionist, and I did nothing to help them, because I was not a Church Unionist. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to help me.
Listen to Back in the USSR. Welcome back. And of course, what we're talking about on this show is the struggle against fascism. And that, of course, was Oi Polloi with a classic anti-fascist song from 1993, Bash the Fash, from the English anti-fascist movement, which was actually very, very strong at that time. And really had to be, given the kind of the far-right forces that were really going strong in the UK at that time, and frankly, are going strong again right now. But it needs to be remembered that fascist violence, like all reactionary violence, targets the marginalized and oppressed. Just as reactionary ideology attempts to channel popular working class anger away from their real ruling class oppressors and onto marginalized scapegoats like Muslim immigrants, Hispanic immigrants, Jews, African Americans, LGBTQ people, etc. That's what right-wing violence is all about. That's what right-wing ideology is all about. You know, scapegoating marginalizing, persecuting oppressed people. Left-wing violence, by contrast, fights the real enemies and the real oppressors of the working class and oppressed people around the world. This is why communists historically have been the most effective and dedicated fighters against fascism. This is why communists are targeted and demonized, and why events like the EU's Day of Remembrance for the Victims of All Totalitarian and Authoritarian Regimes, you know, a day which attempts to equate communism and fascism, are really pro-fascist propaganda exercises. I'd like to read, you know, there's a lot of, like, once again, we were talking before about, like, how in the U.S. media, you know, they try to equate, in the wake of Charlottesville, they try to equate left-wing and right-wing violence as if these are the same things and they're equally to blame for what happened in Charlottesville, you know, which is disgusting, a disgusting comparison. But of course, the same thing happens often with communism and fascism. Like, they're equated, even though they're, you know, communism is the enemy of fascism, the strongest enemy of fascism that has ever existed and will ever exist, frankly. But, you know, these two things are equated by the propagandists that you see in the EU, in North America as well. You know, the EU has created whole, like I mentioned, whole days of remembrance of the victims of communism and fascism. They put it all together. They treat it like it's the same. And that's profoundly insulting. You know, it really is just like the most messed up thing you can think of. I'd actually like to read some excerpts from a statement written by 60 different communist parties from around the world in response to this EU Day of Remembrance. And this was published on Telesur. Now, and it goes like this. In response to the European Union's event to commemorate, quote, the victims of Nazism and communism, more than 60 communist parties from around the world released a statement denouncing it. They called the gathering an anti-communist meeting that unacceptably equates communism with the monster of fascism and its atrocities. The provocative identification of communism with fascism means exonerating fascism and the womb that gives birth to and nourishes it, the exploitative capitalist system, the party stated. This is why, when communists are being persecuted and condemned and communist parties are being banned in a number of EU countries, at the same time honors are being bestowed on and pensions provided to Nazi collaborators and their political descendants, they added. The event, which took place on Wednesday in Tallinn, Estonia, was organized by the Estonian government, which currently holds the EU presidency. It was based on a resolution adopted in 2009 by the regional body that pegs August 23rd as the Europe-wide Day of Remembrance for the victims of all totalitarian and authoritarian regimes. Both the texts of Hitler's Mein Kampf and Karl Marx include it, the idea to use terror to keep dictatorships in power. Goran Lindblad, a member of the Swedish Moderate Party, said at the event, which included speakers from Germany, Canada, Moldova, and Estonia. Greece's Justice Minister Stavros Kontonis rejected his invitation to the event last week, saying that it, quote, sends a wrong and dangerous political message. The event revives the Cold War climate that brought so much suffering to Europe, runs contrary to the values of the EU, and certainly does not reflect the view of the Greek government and the Greek people, which is that Nazism and communism could never exist as two parts of the same equation, he insisted. Communist parties from around the world have been continuing to sign onto the statement against the event. Quote, 100 years after the great October Socialist Revolution, the superiority of the socialist system cannot be concealed, however many tons of mud they may throw at it. The statement concludes. And by the way, in addition to that, the KKE, the Greek Communist Party, actually did condemn, or at least criticize the Greek government for, all of a sudden, stepping up to the plate like this and acting like it was anti-fascist all along, when, of course, like, just last year, it was actually going to events like this and basically embracing this this whole like false equation between capitalism and between fascism and communism, you know. So, and of course we at this event, like, there were Canadian representatives at this event, and it's no surprise seeing like the level of apologism for fascism that has been going on in this country from the government, especially with regard to with Ukraine and to Eastern Europe. I mean, like I said, there are right sector chapters, and for that matter, Golden Dawn chapters active in places like Toronto. So this is not just an American problem. I mean, like, there are U.S. that, you know, there are fascist groups in Canada. Like I was saying before, my comrade in Ottawa is engaged in the active resistance against such groups, shutting down far-right rallies. We had 500 fascists marching in Quebec City last week. You know, this is a very real thing, and it's frankly terrifying. But once again, people are standing up and they're fighting back, and they will not be intimidated by these far-right demonstrators who often have the backing of the police when they march. And of course, getting back to communism, communists have shed blood in the struggle against fascism. The number of martyrs in the struggle against fascism cannot be counted, especially if we're talking about World War II. But the number of communists who have fallen in the struggle against fascism is just astronomical. And communists, of course, we continue to fight against fascism, and we continue to do so. And these attempts to paint us as somehow collaborating with our greatest enemy is just the most disgusting thing imaginable for a communist, to be equated with a fascist. That is absolutely almost the worst insult that a communist can receive. And we won't stand for it. We will not stand for that. especially when it's coming from like these frankly assholes like Christina Freeland, who of course like are, you know, celebrate their Nazi collaborating grandfathers. You know, this kind of stuff. I mean, all these people who like, you know, are cozy with right-wing violence. These people in the Republican Party in the States are like, or the Democrats who of course like are equally complicit in backing fascism in Europe. Even when they apparently cry crocodile tears when it happens in the States, you know, like this is nonsense. You know, it's like you get these kind of like people in the ruling class who say these things. Don't believe it for a second. They have no problem with right-wing violence. They're not the ones on the front lines who are fighting against this sort of thing. They're not the ones in the streets. They're not the ones putting their bodies, you know, their safety on the line. You know, it's almost always communists and anarchists who do that. You know, it's left-wing forces who do that, committed people who are willing to make that sacrifice. And it's basically always been like that. Now, right now, I'd like to pay tribute to one anti-fascist hero in particular. His name is Ernst Thälmann. He was the leader of the German Communist Party, KPD, which spearheaded the anti-fascist struggle in Weimar Germany, and whose paramilitary formation, the Red Front, actually fought the SA in the streets, fought against the Nazi stormtroopers in the streets. And Ernst Thälmann, he never surrendered up to the time when the Nazis executed him in 1944. And he's just one example. I mean, there are countless thousands like him. But I would like to play this song, which is the Ernst Thälmann song in tribute to him and to the others who paid the ultimate price struggling against fascism. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Einen Finger kann man brechen. Fünf Finger sind eine Faust.
Heimat, da trägt deine Glieder. Kühn und beflaggt ist das Jahr. Breit in den Schultern.
Gefallen, Schinder und Faust der Nation. brechen den Feinden die Klauen. Thälmann ist immer dabei.
Thälmann, Thälmann vor allen, Deutschlands unsterblicher Sohn. Thälmann ist niemals gefallen, Stimme und Faust der Nation. Thälmann ist niemals gefallen.
Das Wertvollste, was der Mensch besitzt, ist das Leben. Es wird ihm nur ein einziges Mal gegeben. Und benutzen soll er es so, dass er sterbend sagen kann, mein ganzes Leben, meine ganze Kraft habe ich dem Herrlichsten auf der Welt, dem Kampf für die Befreiung der Menschheit gewidmet.
Halt, Stand! Rotes Madrid!
Halt, Stand! Rotes Madrid! Halt, Stand! Stand ist Madrid! Das Weltall brüllt, die Menschheit blüht, ihr wird mal singt ein Heldenlied, Millionen singen mit. Halt, Stand!
Und schicken dir die Faschisten auch ihre Söldner ins Land. Sie alle werden zerbrechen an deinem Widerstand.
Halt, Stand! Rotes Madrid! Halt, Stand! Schwarzes Madrid! Das Weltall brüllt, die Menschheit blüht, wir
wollen sie uns verwehren, an deiner Seite zu sein. Die kühnsten Kämpfer auf Erden marschieren in deinen Reihen.
Halt, Stand! Rotes Madrid! Halt, Stand! Schwarzes Madrid! Das Weltall brüllt, die Menschheit blüht, die wir hier fallen sind.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. That was two anti-fascist songs, German anti-fascist songs. One, of course, was the Ernst Thälmann Lied, you know, Ernst Thälmann's song celebrating the leader of the German Communist Party, who, of course, dedicated his life to fighting against fascism. And of course, we had Ernst Busch singing the Halt, Stand, Rotes Madrid, of a song of the German volunteers in the international brigades. In the Ernst Thälmann Brigade, actually, is what the brigade was called, of the German volunteers who went to fight against fascism in Spain in the Spanish Civil War. And comrades, it's very important that we remember who our heroes are. Very important. Capitalist mainstream history always tries to erase or demonize them. You know, the real heroes really fought against fascism. You know, whether it's communist leaders like Thälmann or the brave soldiers of the international brigades who fought against fascism in Spain, you know, for who that song was dedicated, it's a tribute to. You know, and our heroes are just as ancient as the inhuman systems they fought against. You know, this has been going on for thousands of years. People have been standing up. And I know I've talked about this on the show, like how the revolutionary tradition is so old. You know, it goes back like thousands of years. You know, as people have been fighting back and people have been overthrowing their oppressors. You know, overthrowing ruling class forces. And they've been resisting and they've been sacrificing. I mean, the word fascism actually stems from the Latin word fasces. And the fasces were a bundle of sticks with an axe in the middle and actually formed one of the most potent symbols of power in the ancient Roman Empire, symbolizing its ability and determination to crush all resistance to its authority. And Roman armies would actually carry this, the fasces, into battle. You know, when they were up against rebellious subjects, or they were up against slaves, or they were slave rebels, or various forces they were against, they would carry this as a symbol that they were going to crush all opposition to Rome. And even though fascism didn't exist back then as a modern ideology, the famous rebel slave leader Spartacus performed what on some level could be interpreted as the first anti-fascist action in history when early in his rebellion, his very famous rebellion against the Roman slavocracy, he struck down, he cut down a Roman officer and seized the fasces from his dead hands and then lifted it high to show his comrades that the brutal Roman slavocracy and its soldiers could be beaten. And at that moment, the Roman army fell apart and fled the field. After it had been demonstrated so clearly that Rome was not invincible, that these slaves, these lowly people who they didn't even think were full human beings, could defeat them. They had the spirit, they had the will, they had the courage, and they refused to be treated like beasts or animals. That these slaves, who followed Spartacus, they could rise up and they could beat the Roman Empire. And them seizing the fasces, Spartacus seizing the fasces from that Roman officer and holding it high as a symbol of the triumph of the slaves against this brutal, inhuman system. Like, in some ways, that could be interpreted as one of the first anti-fascist victories in history. Because, of course, fascists in Italy, they actually took the name from the fasces. They were actually hearkening back to the Roman Empire. And, of course, Italy under Mussolini, they even had these grandiose schemes to rebuild the Roman Empire. And, of course, the Roman Empire was one of the most brutal institutions ever to exist in the history of mankind. But, of course, one of the features of fascism is they like to revive an idealized past. That's really what they do. They idealize this past systems, whether that's in the Middle Ages, the ancient world, and then they try to revive they paint all these grandiose visions, and then use that to as a justification for capitalist rapacity to an unheard of degree. But Spartacus proved that the Roman Empire could be beaten, just as modern revolutionaries have shown us again and again how the modern capitalist state and its fascist hired guns can be overcome, and that new societies that eliminate exploitation and put the power in the hands of the people can be built in their place. And they have around the world. Be it from the Soviet Union to Cuba, China to Vietnam. Angola to Grenada, all these places, and we see the revolutionary power of the people, of working class people, when they rise up and they fight back against the forces that have been oppressing them. We must always remember and be inspired as we struggle today, comrades. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Before I saw the light, a comradeship of heroes was laid. From every corner of the world came sailors, the 15th International Brigade. They came to stand beside the Spanish people, to try and stem the rise in such a time. Frank was I, where the powerful and the wealthy, my cries came from the other side. Even the olives were bleeding, as the battle for a bitter day thundered on. Truth and love against the force of evil, brotherhood against the fascist hand.
prosper. Don't get out of your cross to pyramid easy game. From Derry came a brave young Christian brother. Side by side they fought and died in Spain. But Tommy Woods at 17 died in Cordova. And with the DNA he learned to hold a gun. From Dublin to the Via del Reno, where he fought and died beneath the Spanish sun. Many Irish heard the call of Franco. Joined Hitler and Mussolini too. Propaganda from the Portland newspaper. At the lucky two enlisted blue shirt crew. And the word came from the church support the Nazis. And the men of Clough it failed again. But the bishops blessed the blue shirts in delirium. And the sail beneath the swastika to Spain. Viva la Quinta Regalia. No pass around to bless the dead and fight. Adamante is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight. This song is a tribute to Frank Ryan. That's Conway and Jimmy Cody too. A Peter Daly, Charlie Reagan and Hugh Morris. Though many died and have but never feel. Bobby Doyle, the Lippert and Charlie Donnelly. Lee Tomlinson and Jim Stanley from the ball. Jack Nelty, Tommy Patton and Frank Conroy. Jim Foley, Tony Fox and Dick O'Neill. Viva la Quinta Regalia. No pass around the pledge that made him fight. Adelante is the cry around the hillside. Let us all remember them tonight.
Listen to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM, CFRU. That was Christy Moore with Viva la Quinta Brigada. Long live the 15th Brigade of the International Brigades, in celebration, of course, of the anti-fascist heroes who fought against fascism in Spain in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. And it came from around the world to do so and showed incredible heroism and solidarity in the process. And that particular, the 15th Brigade actually came from Ireland. But of course, there was the Mackenzie Papineau Brigade that came from Canada. There was the Abraham Lincoln Brigade that came from the States. There was the Ernst Thälmann Brigade that came from Germany. There were, you know, 15 different international brigades. And of course, that wasn't everybody. I mean, there were Chinese volunteers who were there too. People who didn't even have a brigade, you know, like people came from other countries as well. And they fought against fascism because they understood the importance of this struggle and the need to overcome like these forces, you know, and many of them were of course were killed, made the ultimate sacrifice in that process. And of course, like these people, like they're communist heroes, you know, and they of course like ultimately, they show like what incredible, insulting nonsense this equation between fascism and communism is. Once again, fascism is the ultimate enemy of communism. And communists, of course, we will fight to the end against forces like fascism. And we see them as the most extreme force backing up the capitalist state, really. You know, and they must be opposed. They must be beaten down. They must be stopped. They must be smashed in whenever they raise their ugly head, frankly. Whether that's in you know, the Spanish Civil War, that's in, you know, Charlottesville, North Carolina, or in Quebec City, or in Ottawa, or Toronto, or wherever else. You know, they have to be fought. People have to fight against the fascists. They can't just turn the other cheek. Now, I'm going to take a short break, and I'm going to come back. I'm going to play a talk recently given by the Party of Socialism and Liberation, one of the communist parties that actually was involved in the in fighting against fascism in Charlottesville. They were on the ground. I'm going to play that after the break. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
I'm Ani.
I'm Augusta.
I'm Charlotte.
We're Lonely Parade, and you're listening to CFRU.
Be an everyday hero in your community. Parkinson's Super Walk takes place this September. Since 1990, the event has been raising awareness and funds to support Canadians with Parkinson's, their families, and the health professionals that treat them. Participate at one of the many locations across Canada. To register yourself or a team or to volunteer, visit online at www.parkinsonsuperwalk.ca or call Parkinson Canada at 1-800-565-3000. A stranger
answers, I hesitate. Hey, how you doing? My radio name is Mac D, and I've been hanging around CFRU for a long, long time. Because it's fun. I started off working the equipment, producing shows, and then moved into doing my own show. Along the way, I've learned about local artists and their music, and other artists and music I never would have heard of or listened to before. I'm still here, still doing shows, still having fun. If what I do sounds like something you'd enjoy, visit us on the second floor of the University Center and find out what CFRU has to offer you.
If you ever moved across town, country, or even the world, or if you ever traveled extensively, take a moment and try to remember what it was like to be on the move, to be in a new place for the first time. The Guelph Wellington Local Immigration Partnership and the Guelph Public Library invites you to share your memories and stories at our open mic event, Stories of People on the Move. Join us for Culture Days on September 30th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the downtown branch of the Guelph Public Library to hear and share stories of migration and movement. No registration is necessary, but if you know that you have a story to share, please let us know by signing up through our GWLIP website. That's GuelphWellingtonLIP.ca. You can also find out more about this event and other fantastic Culture Day events at culturedays.ca.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. And like I said before the break, I'm going to play a talk that was given by Peter Kaufman of the Party of Socialism and Liberation on Charlottesville in the anti-fascist struggle. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR. I'm going to play that now.
We've all been seeing and participating in anti-fascist actions ever since the Nazis, the KKK, and other white supremacists submerged themselves within the Trump campaign back in 2016 in an attempt to